Before we get into this week's rewatch of The Walking Dead, I want to take a moment and talk about TrueCar, because when you're looking to buy a car, you want to make sure you're getting real pricing on actual inventory. And a lot of times that's not the case. People configure cars online only to find out that the ones they want aren't available. And with TrueCar, you can get real pricing on actual inventory, not just pricing offered by TrueCar, but pricing offered by the actual dealer. And not just any dealer, a TrueCar certified dealer. What they do is they carefully curate the dealers committed to transparency and offering you a competitive market price. Because with TrueCar, you can easily find the car that you want. Next, TrueCar shows you what other people are paying for the same car you're looking for. Now you know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. That's why over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by that TrueCar certified dealer network, and they're saving an average of over $3,000 off of MSRP. So when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. The Walking Dead Season 1, Episode 3 is over and has been for quite some time, but we're just getting started here on our Walking Dead Season 1 rewatch. And now here are the two guys who are often handcuffed to their microphones. I'm Rob Sisterton, and here's Josh Wiggler. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing really, really well. I am looking forward greatly to discussing this episode, Rob. Tell It to the Frogs, or as it was originally titled, Tell It to the T-Frogs.
Tell It to the T-Frogs, that's right. Yeah, T-Frog never really caught on as a nickname.
No. That was, they tried Tree Frog for a while, and somewhere along the way it became T-Dog, and it stuck, and I think that was the right way to go.
Huge episode 3 of The Walking
for
Dead.
For T-Frog, yes, I completely agreed. I'm sorry, I'm not going to do this again where we're just going to spend the first 2 minutes talking about T-Dog.
It's the introduction of Daryl Dixon, his first appearance on screen. A very different Daryl Dixon than we know in Season 7 of The Walking Dead.
Short hair? Do you like short hair, Daryl
Short hair,
Dixon?
Don't care.
Short hair, don't care. No, everyone's got short hair. Yeah. Carol's got the real short hair that we remember from way back when.
Yeah, speaking of short hair, we get the introduction of the Carol saga. Yes. So it's all happening here back at the camp of The Walking Dead. And then we are going to even venture back to Atlanta to see more about the saga of Merle. And the Dixon brothers are in full view here tonight.
Full view, indeed. It's definitely a very different Daryl Dixon that we're getting at the start of The Walking Dead based on where he begins versus where he ends up. You know, his first scene here with Rick Grimes in this entire series is a lot more contentious than anything you would expect if you don't remember the early going of the show very well. It's fun. It's fun to go back and see, like, the early character interactions, even seeing, like, Rick and Carol interacting, and there was something touching about the Grimes family reunion as well. So a lot to pick apart in this episode 3 here.
Anything else you want to touch on or set up before we go through this?
No, I mean, again, just as always, we are talking about the entirety of Walking Dead through 7.5 seasons or 6.5 seasons at this point. We are recording this before the mid-season 7 premiere. Other than that, we are, you know, full range spoilers for all of that material. So if you've not seen past the first season of Walking Dead, you're in trouble. You want to get out of here right around now.
You're in more trouble than Merle.
No, I don't think that's true. It would be hard to get in worse trouble than Merle right now.
We end up starting this episode off with Merle on the roof, and he's losing it. You really feel for Merle.
Yeah, do you? Do you really feel for Merle? I don't know if I really feel for Merle so much as I'm just, like, really weirded out by whatever it is he's babbling about. Could you make heads or tails of anything he was talking about?
No, I really couldn't. I debated going back and watching with the closed captioning on so I could see. It seems like he is somewhere.
Oh, that's a good call.
Yeah, in between the ramblings of a madman to sort of like Vietnam flashbacks and all sorts of ranting and confessing to different things that have happened to Merle.
Yeah, he's talking about the chain of command, and he's like talking to somebody who isn't there and telling them to kiss his lily white ass. And he's talking about how he was once very depressed about something, but then he kicked some guy's ass and it was all worth it to punch his teeth out. Very weird stuff. It's, you know, some insight into the mind of, I think, a guy who at his best, you know, on his best day is a bit of an angry idiot. And now you have him on one of his worst days. I thought there was a cool trick of the camera when the camera starts sort of pulling out and you get this bird's eye view of Merle after he's had all of these ramblings and rantings, and suddenly it's like he snaps back into reality and realizes, oh shit, I am handcuffed to this frickin' roof right now, and there are walkers, or geeks as they are called here in season one, that are nearby, and I really gotta figure something out. I think that switch from him just being a total lunatic to being still a lunatic, but somebody who's a little bit more present, I thought that was a pretty good switch.
Can we add anything to the Merle backstory? Do you think that Merle was in the armed forces at some point?
You know, I bet that backstory exists. So the Dixon brothers, Merle Dixon and Daryl Dixon, as played by Michael Rooker and Norman Reedus, are not characters from the comic books. This is pretty well known, pretty well established at this point that they are invented purely for the show. But the Dixon brothers obviously really, really took off. Daryl much more than Merle. But even back in the early going of Walking Dead, the question of where's Merle? What's happened to Merle? When are we going to see Merle again? That was one of the really big questions from the first few seasons of the show. And there was definitely an attempt on the part of the makers of The Walking Dead to really seize on that popularity. And I'm blanking on the name of the actual game, but I know that there was a video game that was put out there where Daryl and Merle are the characters you play as, and it's before they meet up with Dale and Shane and Andrea and Laurie and everybody at the camp. And it's like a rail shooter. Like, it's just this really straightforward kind of bullshit game, but I'm sure that there's some backstory that's baked into that, and some of the things we've learned from Daryl along the way, like they had a really terrible father and everything going on there. But I think in terms of Merle's specific history, I don't know how much the show itself actually gets into what Merle's specific past was, other than he and Daryl were extremely close, they work together, they do all of their things together. But I think that based on this rambling monologue that we do get from Merle in this scene, you do get the sense that this guy has seen some time in the military. Yeah. I think that's kind of what he's driving at. And I don't know, an addled guy, this Merle Dixon, a lot going on in his mind, more complicated than he seems at first glance.
I'm going to write the Merle backstory. I think that he was stationed in Kuwait, 1991. He was in Desert Storm.
Yeah. I like that. I think that's good. It's called The Walking Dead Survival Instinct is the name of the game, by the way. It was fine. The final paragraph, or the final line of the first paragraph on its Wikipedia entry is, the critical reception for The Walking Dead Survival Instinct was received poorly.
Oh, you wouldn't think so.
With criticisms mainly directed to the game's graphics, control, and plot, which sounds like everything. Yeah. So,
what's it called again?
The Walking Dead Survival Instinct was the name of this game.
Survival Instinct.
Yeah, Survivor Instinct. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. So write that down.
I think Angry Merles would have been a better way to go.
Angry Merles. I would love Angry Merles. And so are you're shooting things at like pigs that are Merle Dixon? Is that how it works? Or are you launching Merles at walkers, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I haven't figured it all out. I did watch the Angry Birds movie recently.
How was it? Was it good?
You know what? It was, I think that I was not expecting, I thought it would be more of a kids movie, and it was a little more like adult jokes in there than I expected.
I read some criticisms of the movie that said the same thing, but we don't need to get lost in the woods of the Angry Birds right now. There's enough trouble in the woods that we have to deal with without worrying about Angry Birds. So many other animals that we need to have our hearts out for.
Right. So Merle ends up with a belt and he's going to try to lasso some of Dale's tools. We get the backstory later on in the episode. Dale says, you know, the last time I lent my tools to you guys, you left them up on the, you know, in Atlanta. Why did they need to take Dale's tools on this run and bring them up on the roof?
I'm really looking forward to season 18 when we finally get the 90-minute Dale's Tools flashback. I think that's going to be a really quality episode of The Walking Dead. I don't know. I think that, you know, they're making their run into Atlanta and they're trying to get their supplies, and maybe they figure that having Dale's toolkit will be helpful. Apparently it was helpful for Merle. You know, it's good that existed. Otherwise, Merle would have died on that roof.
I'm sure. Yeah, it was helpful for Merle, but I don't really understand why they needed the tools, and secondly, why they needed them on the roof of that building.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think
carrying them all the way up the stairs.
If we're really trying to logic check that, I don't know if it's all going to add up so well. Maybe it's just like a prank that they like to play on Dale. They just know that Dale gets so worked up when you take his tools. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they're just trying to like mess with the old guy
mess
in the camp.
Dale. All right. Yeah. So we end up seeing Rick and Morales T end up arriving back at the quarry. And we see Glenn driving by still with the alarm blaring. People are going to be pissed about that. I mentioned at the end of the last week's episode that Glenn needs to turn that off. We find out this week Glenn doesn't know how.
No, Glenn has no idea how to turn it off, and he's going to be the first person that gets back to the camp, and everyone's going to be really mad that he has the sirens blaring, and someone says to him, I think it's Shane. I think, you know, Shane really is the voice of reason on a lot of these things, I do have to say. Like, listen, like, when Shane has a perspective on something here and saying, like, hey, don't do that thing, it's going to be bad, usually the bad thing does end up happening. So that's just worth noting. But Shane says to Glenn, like, you might have just attracted every walker for miles with that horn. You weren't thinking. And that's not really going to bear out in a big way in this episode, although it does in perhaps a little way, but it's certainly going to bear out in a big way at the end of episode 4.
Okay, so we end up with now the caravan coming back and
Before that, there's something important that I feel like we would be remiss to ignore.
What's
Rob.
That?
It's right before everybody shows back up. It's kind of like the final moment of peace between Shane and Lori and Carl as they know their current existence before Rick returns to their lives. And Lori is cutting Carl's hair, and it's requiring a good amount of arm twisting to get Carl to sit down for a haircut. And it makes so much more sense now that Carl just has this gigantic mop of hair in season 7. It's no coincidence that Carl's mother passes away in season 3 and Carl just never gets a haircut ever again.
Yeah, she needs to like really restrain him to get that haircut going. I mean, I don't know how important it is to give Carl a haircut. It doesn't seem like his hair is that unruly. It seems like that maybe there are bigger fish or frogs to fry at this point. But no, Carl, you sit here. Lori's giving you a haircut.
But I think maybe the thing is that like the cool people in the camp have really, really short hair.
Yeah, that's
like,
what happened to
Daryl. Daryl's got short hair. Carol's not like super cool yet, but she's going to be the coolest character in the show. And she's got like no hair at all.
Yeah.
And so maybe Lori is like, you got to be more like Daryl and Carol. This is the way to go, Carl.
So we find out also in this scene, Josh, that Shane was going to take Carl to go catch frogs. This was a very important thing to do because they're going to start feeding everybody in the camp frogs. When they run out of beans, they're going to be happy that Carl and Shane caught a bunch of frogs. Lori, not interested.
Yeah, yeah. There seem to be two different camps on the matter of frog legs, according to this scene. Shane is on team yum, and Lori and Carl seem to be on team ew. Rob, are you yum or ew when it comes to frog legs?
I mean, I think if I was starving to death, I certainly think I would consider it. I wouldn't be as precious about it as Lori is.
I think frog legs can be a very, very good thing. These people, they just never had a good frog leg. I think it's something everyone ought to try. Maybe give it a whirl. If you're not a meat eater, that's another story. But if you're a meat eater, give a frog leg a try sometime. It's not so bad.
Lori says that she would rather eat Miss Piggy. And then she is like, oh, I mean, that came out wrong. I mean, what's the double entendre that you're going for there, Lori, sicko?
I don't know why Lori's mind immediately goes to like pornographic relations with the Muppets. Yeah. But it seems to be where it went.
Yeah, I don't know. Lori. Weird.
Yeah, right. That's, you know, it makes me wonder, though, would the Muppets be OK in the zombie apocalypse? They wouldn't probably be the first, first up on the menu for the walkers. They're not really interested in non-human meat as much as they are in human meat.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that this leads us into an interesting question, because it seems here in season 1, the walkers are very into eating animals. We see them eat the horse. We see them eating the deer that Daryl shot later on. In this episode, I feel like that in modern day Walking Dead times, I don't think that the walkers are as interested in eating animals.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the last time we really saw walkers gorging on animals. I mean, season four in the first episode, or maybe it's the second episode, one of the first two, when the virus outbreak is really happening, Rick sacrifices all of the prison's pig supply, or many of the pigs, in order to distract the walkers, and that seems to work. So I think that even in the modern era of Walking Dead, walkers will still eat just about any living thing that's put in front of them. Mm-hmm. But I think that they're more inclined to go after the human meat. Once you eat people, you just can't go back from that.
Okay, so we see now when Glenn and Rick show up, the car alarm is blaring, Shane is mad, what are you, crazy, that every walker or geek in the mile radius is going to be coming over here.
Do you like the geeks? Do you like that? Should we bring that back? Should we repopularize the term geeks for walkers?
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Doesn't that end up being what the governor uses in season three?
Is a geek?
Yeah, I feel like that he says geeks. The governor's people, I think that they end up calling them geeks also.
I thought that you were making a joke about his right-hand man, Milton.
No.
That guy's a geek.
Yeah. So maybe that's just sort of like was pretty widely popular, but in Rick's crew, they end up all using the term walker.
Yeah. We're not geeks. We're all one.
Yeah.
There's no more social status here.
Yeah.
No cool kids and geeks.
And bullying.
Yeah. And it's the end of bullying here in The Walking Dead. Well, he did give that speech last week. He's like, you know, there's only white meat or dark meat. There's no cool kids or geeks. There's just peeps.
That's right. Right. Yeah. Thank you, Rick. Thank you for ending bullying.
Yeah, yeah. PC sheriff.
Yeah. Well, Josh, I've long said that the only thing that I feel like is going to save humanity is when the aliens come and invade. I think that then we will all be brother to sister once our alien overlords show up.
Yeah, no, that's probably true. And once again, every time aliens are brought up in the context of Walking Dead, worth reminding that there is actually an alternate universe Walking Dead story where aliens do invade, and it's pretty cool.
What do you mean alternate universe? Like comic book?
It's just like a total like off on a lark issue of The Walking Dead that doesn't take place in main continuity. Where remember when Michonne knocks Rick out because he's going crazy in Alexandria?
Mm-hmm.
There's a backup story in a later issue of Walking Dead where he wakes up from being knocked out by Michonne, and now suddenly he's in the thick of an alien invasion. And now he and Michonne have like lightsabers and stuff, and they have to fight the aliens. It's pretty sweet.
Okay.
Yeah. So go seek that out if you're bored.
Is it on top of the already broken out zombie apocalypse?
Yeah, I don't know if the zombies are involved in it anymore. I think that like the whole thing is he wakes up and finds out that all of it was a dream, and now he's on a spaceship, and now he has to fight like an evil governor or something like that. It's all very confusing and very silly.
Okay.
But it's fun. It's well illustrated, and that's all that matters.
So once the Rick caravan shows up, seems like that Rick really does take his sweet ass time getting out of the truck.
Yeah. And the truck like parks in such a way that you can't, like, you very specifically can't see who is driving the truck. So it's just like parked in a very convenient way to draw out the drama a little bit longer. But yeah, Rick is like, maybe it's like, oh, I'm not good around new people. I'm a little uncomfortable. Nervous. All you guys have been calling me an asshole for the past 3 hours. I don't know how this is going to go, but I guess I just got to meet everybody. All right, here we go.
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, his family's there.
Rick waits to be dramatically introduced as well, where it's like, hey, how'd you guys get out of there? Like, new guy got us out. He's a cop. And then he comes out. And really, I don't think that as big of a coincidence as this was, I don't think that they made enough of a deal about this. Like, oh my God, what are the chances?
Everyone seems to accept it pretty well. Mm-hmm. Like everyone's like, oh, this is great. Hey, Rick, we'd heard some stuff about you. It's nice to know that you're still alive. There's no one being like, really?
Yeah.
This is a one in a million thing. Like this is like a
10
really...
people survived. Right.
Yeah. Of potentially of everybody in the world. And here you are suddenly just like showing up and you're trying to tell us that like you didn't successfully track your family down. You just by happenstance found a group of people that happened to know your wife and son. That's pretty incredible, Rick. Yeah. At this point, you would think that everybody would just like stop everything that they're doing and just be like, OK, I got to really reevaluate the concept of fate because this feels very fated.
Right. 10 million people in the state of Georgia, according to the 2013 census. So pretty amazing odds, but we don't spend a lot of time thinking about that. And Lori doesn't seem that thrilled about the whole thing. Like, Carl is like running to Rick. Carl is pumped up, but Lori seems a little annoyed that this is happening to me. Did you read that body language?
No, I mean, I think a few things are happening with Lori here. I mean, we find out later in the episode when she has her big confrontation with Shane that Shane had told Lori that Rick was dead. She believed that Rick was dead, and suddenly now Rick is up and about walking around. It's not just that, like, they had to leave their neighborhood and head for Atlanta, and they left Rick behind in the hospital knowing that, like, it might not work out for him. Lori left because she believed that Rick was dead, and there's going to be elaboration on that in the upcoming episodes.
So she thinks it's a ghost.
So, yeah, and as we've talked about, there may be ghosts in the Walking Dead universe. Certainly the ghost governor, so this could be Ghost Grimes. I think that for her, she's like, this defies a lot of what I've come to know over the past, you know, few weeks. It makes her question Shane, and why would Shane lie about something like this? And not for nothing, she's been banging Shane. Mm-hmm. She and Shane have been knocking boots. And now Rick is back, and that's her husband. She's had a hard time with Rick. You know, in the times leading up to him getting shot, she's had a lot of time to regret the way that both of them have behaved. And now he's suddenly back and she's been, you know, sleeping with his best friend. It's all very, very complicated. So I think that there's like a mixture of disbelief, probably some anxiety and certainly some anger that's going on there. And then I think a little bit of relief as well. We certainly see in the first night that Rick is back, at least, that Lori and Rick seem to be on the same page. It's short-lived, but at least for the moment, they seem to be on the same side.
Shane seems happy.
Kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, he kind of is like, well, this is great that Rick's alive, but this isn't so great for me in terms of, you know, dating Lori Grimes anymore. Doesn't seem like that's really going to continue.
Yeah. Like, maybe he's happy he dodged a bullet. It's okay, but good. She's Rick's problem again.
She's getting clingy. This is getting to be too much.
Yeah.
No.
You don't even need frog legs.
That was the deal breaker. I think that she, you know, I think Shane at this point is there's the mixture of relief that Rick is alive and also probably a sense of like, oh God, I've got to answer for some stuff and things are going to be very different moving forward. So it's tough. And I mean, we really don't get a good Rick and Shane moment following this reunion. Like, things are already kind of weird and tense between these two for the rest of the time that they're here together in this episode, I thought.
Yeah, the closest we get to that is we end up seeing, like, everybody sitting around the campfire at nighttime, and Rick talks about how he was just so disoriented. He felt like he was ripped out of his life, trapped in a coma. He tells Shane how grateful he is for just doing him a real solid and just taking good care of his family while he was away.
Yeah, an understatement, you would think.
Yeah.
Right? It feels like, you know, I'm like, I mean, if you're already offering Dale your entire van to be stripped down for parts, you got to leave something for Shane. Like, you need a little more than a thank you. You couldn't have brought a gift back from Atlanta, perhaps a mermaid necklace?
No, nothing.
I feel like a mermaid necklace would have worked well for Shane.
That would have been a good look. I like it.
A frog necklace perhaps would have been better.
A merman. So we also get the introduction of Mr. Carroll, a.k.a. Ed, here for a bit in season one. We don't get to know too much about Ed, but Ed, he makes a big fire and really pisses off Shane. He's getting on Shane's last nerve, this Ed.
I think as we're going to see in this episode, Shane is really just looking for an excuse to kick the shit out of something.
Yeah.
Like, really, it does not matter what it is. And he certainly has a bone or two to pick with Ed in this episode. Yeah. I can't even react to that. I'm not prepared to react to that. He has issues. He has issues with Ed. I don't think he has any bones involved with Ed. But he is not thrilled with Ed starting this fire. I guess it's against fire code, according to Shane, that they have very specific fire rules around camp, and he does not appreciate that Ed is violating fire code.
And there's nobody worse in the history of The Walking Dead or TV than Ed, right?
the very worst of anyone that has ever appeared on television ever.
Does Ed have one redeeming moment or characteristic in the entire time that we see him? Like, at least when we get to in Alexandria, when Rick starts dating Jesse, and Jesse's husband is the doctor, and at least he's a doctor, but he's kind of like an abusive alcoholic, that Ed doesn't even seem to be drunk and is just horrible. Like, Ed's just, his normal state is horrible, a-hole, and abusive.
I think that there is one redeeming quality to Ed, or perhaps two. Is the first one is that he is an incredible punching bag. You know, Shane really is going to lay into him, and it's going to be incredible. And not to get too far down the road, but Carol is going to be able to get some licks in as well. Mm-hmm. She's going to be able to really take Ed to town, and it's a great scene. So there's that, and also I think that, you know, this is part of the start of the great Carol arc. It's probably the best character arc on the show, I think, is Carol's transformation from someone who is so in such a terrible position and such a terrible situation with this guy, and is such a clear-cut victim from this guy and such a horrible marriage with this terrible piece of crap, but she's going to rise from this and become the strongest character on the show for a good long while. So I think that just as like a point of origin, there's something, you know, worth valuing here in that character being on the show. But as a person and as an individual, this guy can go get effed. He can tell it to the frogs for all I'm concerned.
Yeah. So the other conversation that everybody's talking about is, so who's going to tell Daryl Dixon about Merle? Merle is missing. Merle didn't come back. Good riddance. Everybody's happy Merle is gone. But what are we going to tell the other Dixon brother, Daryl?
There seem to be a lot of concerns about delivering this news to Daryl. And of course, I mean, this is his brother that this has happened to. That's not great. So you can certainly understand why telling anyone, you know, such bad news about a family member is not going to go over well. But there's like racial concerns with Daryl. Mm-hmm. There's a comment from Glenn who tells T-Dog that maybe this news will come better, you know, from a white guy. I don't remember there being like racial tension with Daryl Dixon at the start of the show, but maybe it makes sense given the fact that he's kind of just his brother's, you know, total toady. Yeah. Like he's just willing to do anything that Merle does. So maybe if Merle thinks racism is cool, then Daryl thinks racism is cool. But I guess I'd forgotten that there were like racial concerns with Daryl Dixon at the start of this show.
Yeah, certainly an easy thing to forget. And maybe it's the case where Merle probably, maybe it wasn't the first time that he made certain remarks about T-Dog when he was up on the roof. Like maybe that had already been a thing and people just assume that Daryl was also thinking the same way because Merle was such an outspoken front person for the two of them.
It paints a scary, ominous picture or a rough picture of Daryl Dixon, you know, hearing about him here for the first time. Like, we've already met Merle. We already know what Merle is all about. And that guy is like a bag of shit. That guy sucks. He's just a terrible, terrible person from everything that we have seen at this point. And now they're talking about how they're scared of his brother. So it really does sort of give you this idea that this is going to be a very, very terrible next day whenever it comes to pass that Daryl shows back up in camp. And I think that's just kind of a funny thing to reflect on, given that Daryl will go on to become by far and away the most popular character on this show. Mm-hmm. So just like, you know, the hype for him, like sort of this like boogeyman approach to him when we're first hearing about him for the first time, really kind of flies in the face of everything we're going to come to learn about Daryl. But is definitely a rough around the edges character when he starts out.
Now, T-Dog says that he thinks Merle is still up there, that he says that that hallway was so narrow the geeks couldn't get through. I think he leaves out the part that he locked him up there. I don't know. And again, that the zombies are able to open the doorknob like the velociraptors here,
right,
as
right,
well.
As we've established. I think that he did say that I locked it up. Mm-hmm. So I think that he's floating out there that there's a chance for Merle. You know, he's just putting it out there and he's saying he might still be alive. And if he's alive, that's on us. And that's clearly going to sit with Rick. You know, that's going to sit with him for the whole night. And he's going to do something about that the next day.
So we see Rick put Carl to bed, and then Rick and Lori end up going to bed in their tent. Pretty nice accommodations, I have to say, at this survivors camp.
king size tent.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice tent.
They got the honeymoon suite for the night, I guess.
Everybody has a tent as nice as this, but this is like a really sweet place that Rick and Lori have set up. And we see Lori has all of the photo albums that she took from the house. What ends up happening to these photo albums? Where do they end up being left, Josh?
That's a great question. I'm not sure. Obviously, somewhere along the way, they're not going to be in the equation anymore. My guess, just based on memory alone, would be season 2's finale when Herschel's farm is going to get
Herschel's
overrun.
Farm.
And I think that they're going to lose the Winnebago then as well. And they're going to be on the road for the next several months before they find the prison, and they're really feral at that point. So I would think that most of their belongings are gone by the end of season 2.
All right. So we end up with, then we see like an ominous shot of like Shane sitting on the roof of like the Winnebago with like just like under the umbrella. Like now he's like, hey, that was my bed. And now you're sleeping in it with Lori.
It was so comfortable. It was the only place I could sleep in this place. But yeah, he's like drilling holes with his eyes into the tent. Like, what's going on in there? And it turns out, I mean, they, you know, the Grimes family's back together. Rick and Lori are really enjoying their reunion right now. So Shane is just watching that from a distance, and it's definitely a little bit creepy. Definitely a little bit creepy. Also a little bit creepy when Lori's like, don't worry, Rick, Carl won't wake up. And you gotta like, if you're Rick in that moment, you might want to like stop and be like, wait, what does that mean? Like, has she done this before since I've been
yeah,
unconscious?
That's a good point.
It's like, trust me, Carl won't wake up. I've done this 100 times with Shane since you've been gone.
Yeah,
but he doesn't really process that.
And then he wakes up the next morning and sees everything that's going on. Looks like his shoelaces are missing. Is that what Rick is looking at with his shoes?
Yeah, maybe that was, that's the ticket. You know, that's the service charge for getting everybody in so much trouble in Atlanta. It's like, all right, well, thanks for bringing us back. And now we take your shoelaces as well.
It's not like the kind of thing that before they were going to tell, somebody was going to tell him about Shane and Lori. They had to take his shoelaces away to make sure he wasn't going to hang himself or anything like that. That's what they do in jail.
Yeah, maybe. That's a good point. That's a good point. It's possible. It's possible. But nobody tells him about Lori and Shane. So I would guess not.
Josh, is Carol ironing? And if so, why?
Irony singletoning. I don't know. I don't know what she's doing here. She's cleaning Rick's clothes. This is the first exchange between Rick and Carol that we're ever going to see. And we're going to find out later on that Carol doing Rick's laundry is going to pay off for everybody later on in this season.
Yeah. But she does appear to be using an iron.
I didn't notice the iron, but I trust your eyes.
Are wrinkles a big problem?
A wrinkle in the time of The Walking Dead. I'm not sure. I don't really worry about wrinkles in my day-to-day life, and I don't have to worry about the apocalypse. So I think that I would be fine without ironing most of my stuff.
Glenn is very upset that they're stripping his car, his awesome car that they stole. They're taking it all away for parts. Rick is asked, did you sleep okay? And he said, yeah, better than I slept in a long time. Rick, you were in a damn coma for 3 months. What are you complaining about?
Does that count as sleep? I don't know how restful that coma was.
A coma is not restful?
Yeah, I have no idea. I've never been in one. I've been in a food coma.
Food coma, sure. That's restful.
Like a turkey coma post-Thanksgiving or something like that.
You wake up in the morning. I ask you, boy, Josh, how'd you sleep last night? He said, boy, it was like I was in a coma. Then that's good.
I've never said that to you, at least on the record. And if you're bringing our off the record conversations into this, then I feel like that's unfair.
So I don't know. All right. So yeah. Shane's going to show back up with a bunch of water for the camp, and all hell is about to break loose. But before we get to that, let me just take a moment and talk about Nature Box, Josh, because look, there's a lot of snacks that you can go and get in the zombie apocalypse, but none of them are appetizing.
None of them are appetizing unless it's venison, which sounds really, really good as long as it's not diseased venison.
Right. Nobody has the self-control to resist all of the bad snacks out there, all of the junk food, but you in 2017 can do snacking right with Nature Box, because Nature Box is making snacks that taste great and are better for you, created with high quality ingredients, free from artificial colors, flavors, or sweeteners, all things that you could feel great about, Josh.
I feel so great about those things. I feel like these guys could use some sweeteners. I mean, I guess it was pretty sweet when everybody reunited and it was very happy family reunions, but I think in terms of their food situation, they could use a pick-me-up.
Sure, a natural one, but forget about those artificial sweeteners. That's the one thing that the Walking Dead people have going for them, freedom from all those artificial sweeteners, because when you're having some of my personal favorites, like the pistachio power clusters and the dark cocoa nom-noms, you'll be loving life. But NatureBox made their service even better. Now you can order as much as you want, as often as you want, without a minimum purchase required, and cancel anytime. Just go to naturebox.com. Check out the whole snack catalog. Over 100 snacks to choose from. They're always adding delicious new snacks. You can choose what you want. They deliver them right to your door. And you'll never get bored with new snacks every month, inspired by real customer feedback. You try something you don't like, they replace it for free. And right now, you'll save even more when NatureBox is offering our fans 50% off their first order. When you go to naturebox.com/podcast, that's naturebox.com/podcast for 50% off the first order at naturebox.com/podcast. All right. So we end up hearing some cries for help, Josh.
Cries for help. And it's, you know, this was confusing to me. Like, you're, it seems like everyone's worried about Carl. Is Carl present in this scene? Like, is he even in danger in this moment?
I thought maybe he saw something and then he ran away.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Carl, you know, Carl the Craven back in season one is certainly not the courageous Carl that we know him to be.
Right, that's going to go kill
years.
Negan.
Yeah, we've come a long way for Carl. I really do think that the growth of Carl has been really something to behold. Yeah, he's afraid of a geek eating a deer, but has no problem going off on his own to just machine gun a bunch of saviors later on down the line.
Carl's really come full circle from getting a haircut from Laurie here in episode number 3 to shaving Negan in the first half of season 7.
Yeah. It's a lot. He's learned a lot along the way. But they hear these screams in the woods starting from Carl, it seems like, and then they go and they see that there is a walker who has, you know, stumbled pretty close to camp. Apparently this is the closest a walker has ever come to the camp. And it's eating one of these deers that's just riddled with arrows. We, of course, are going to find out who those arrows belong to. But it kind of curious tactic in terms of how to dispatch of this walker.
Yeah.
I thought people didn't really seem to figure out exactly what it is they need to be doing here.
Yeah, it took about 5 people to bring down this one sort of dim-witted slow walker.
Yeah, and they all have like a bunch of like really like long objects. Like, I think Rick has a crowbar, somebody's got a pitchfork, and they're just like a ton of torso shots, just nothing but torso shots. They're just like beating this thing in the back and the chest over and over and over again, and not a single person is worried about the head until Dale gets the bright idea, or perhaps it's just like a moment of panic, or maybe he even missed. Maybe he was aiming for the chest, but he ends up decapitating this walker. But it takes like 30 seconds to take this guy down.
Yeah, and then the disembodied head is like still going. They have to later on sort of bludgeon the head as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think for all the things that we can say about how different Daryl is in his first scenes of The Walking Dead, at least he gets the rules right away. Like, he's like, you guys are idiots. You have to shoot it in the brain. What do you think you're doing?
And then we hear some rustling, and finally Daryl Dixon emerges to say, some bitch.
Yeah, some bitch. That's his first line. Some bitch.
Yeah. Great
classic,
first line.
Classic opening remark from Daryl Dixon. Okay.
So apparently what had happened, Josh, was that Daryl Dixon had shot this deer with the arrows, and then a walker started eating it. I mean, could you explain it? I mean, how far away was Daryl Dixon that he hit this deer with the bow and arrow and then was so far away from it that it takes him like what, how many minutes to get to where the deer is? And in that time, a walker comes and is eating half the deer.
Yeah, and not for nothing, it took like 16 minutes for the guys to kill this one walker. So like, you have to add that on top of everything else. Yeah, it takes Daryl a weirdly long time to show up after having shot this deer, a walker coming to eat it, everybody coming and killing the walker, and then Daryl appears. And it hasn't even like seen any of this take place. Mm-hmm. Like, he didn't even have like a vantage point to see what was going on. It's very strange. The timing doesn't
maybe
add up.
There was a second deer that Daryl had gone off after. He got one and is like, oh, here's another one, and then he went after that one or another squirrel.
Okay, So it's like he shot the one deer, saw another deer, is like, okay,
let's go with the squirrel, because he has 12 squirrels.
He does seem to prefer squirrel, or at least he doesn't mind it right from the jump. He's a big squirrel guy. That makes sense. And Daryl seems like the guy easily distracted by a squirrel, much like a squirrel might be distracted by a nut.
Yeah, and Daryl is looking for Merle. He's like, Merle, do you think that he was going to tell Merle he has squirrel for Merle?
Merle, I got squirrel for you, Merle.
Merle, squirrel.
Yeah, Squirrel Dixon. Yeah. Maybe that's what they called Merle back in the day.
Yeah. So Shane has to talk to Daryl. There's been a problem.
Yeah. We lost your brother.
So he's dead.
And Daryl is pissed.
He's dead.
Dead is probably pushing it. We would assume that he's probably in grave danger, but we don't know that for sure. It's explained to Daryl from the very, very gentle words of Rick Grimes, that your brother is an asshole and we locked him on a roof.
Yeah.
And, sorry about that. And Daryl does not take that very well.
Yeah. Well, he tries. He says, he's like, well, I'm just trying to process this. So you handcuffed my brother to a roof and you left him there? Yeah.
You know, when you frame it like that, like, I understand why Daryl's not going to take this so well.
Yes. And so Daryl is going to fight Rick, and Shane and Rick have to take on Daryl.
Yeah, pretty cool move from Daryl. Like, you wouldn't expect, like, Daryl seems to, like, really care about those squirrels, so you would never expect him to use those squirrels as a weapon. But he tosses, like, this big, like, rope link of squirrels that he's caught at Rick. And in a testament to Rick's fighting style as well, Rick is able to just, like, sidestep that. He's like, no, I anticipated that. Mm-hmm. I know, Daryl, deep in my bones. We are going to be brothers someday.
Yeah. T-Dog says that he's to blame. Sort of.
I don't know why, like, after seeing Daryl's reaction to all of this, that T-Dog thought it would be, like, a good idea to take any ownership over this. Daryl, he takes a knife out. He's trying to stab Rick, and T-Dog is going to think, you know what, maybe I should throw my share of responsibility into this as well. If you're T-Dog at this point, it's just like, okay, I will never speak of what I did to Merle ever again. Yeah. I should not bring that up. I will certainly not bring it up around Daryl.
Yeah. So we end up with Rick saying that he's going to mount a crew to go back to Atlanta. Glenn is going to go. You'll have Glenn's vehicle stealing abilities.
Yeah, Glenn is volunteered for this job. It's worth pointing out. Glenn himself is not exactly into going, but he kind of has no choice. Okay. Or at least he's the kind of guy that, you get an idea in his head. Maybe he thinks he can get another sports car in Atlanta.
And you'll have T-Dog.
So that's the crew. It's going to be Rick, Daryl, Glenn, and T-Dog. And we talked about this last week, too, of like how shocking it is that there are really no red shirts on the rooftop in Atlanta. No one is, you know, except for Merle, who is left behind. Like, we're not going to see any of those characters get killed off in that sequence. And once again, here we've got four people, and you would think that, like, T-Dog is in trouble here. You would think that something could happen to Daryl on your first watch, perhaps. But all four of these guys are going to make it out okay, Rob. Yeah. It's a good thing.
T-Dog, I think, is in the red shirt role, but that's not going to be for a while.
He's in the red shirt role, but it's a long time before his shirt becomes red. And I think that you have to just give props to the man for surviving as long as he was able to.
Yeah. Okay. So that they try to talk Shane into this, because again, Shane is the voice of reason. Like, no, this is stupid. Why are you doing this? They say, well, I got a lot of guns, left a lot of guns there. Guns on the table.
You know, I do like guns. It's an interesting proposition. Yeah. But even then, I mean, like, Lori is furious. She is very upset. And it's just like it feels like an immediate reminder for why Rick and Lori were not simpatico in the days leading up to Rick's coma. So it's just like Rick is there for one really good night with his family. And then instantly Lori is just furious with Rick all over again.
He's got to go back out. Lori's like, why do you have to do this?
It's a great point. You know, if it's just for the guns, that's one thing. And even then, it's really risky considering you saw what Atlanta was like and you think it's going to be any better. Maybe just leave that behind. But
the
Shane
Golden Globe winning Atlanta.
Yes, indeed. Oh, I love that show. Shane is even going to be the guy who says, like, Merle Dixon, would pull, he's a regular Sioux Hawk, would not, feed you any water if he saw you in a desert, dying of thirst. Mm-hmm. And Daryl does not appreciate that description of Merle right in front of him, but does nothing about it. And even still hearing that and having observed everything that he did observe on the rooftop, Rick is still feeling like that's a terrible way to leave a man to die. We can't do that. We have to go and we have to risk everything and blah, 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 blah. And it just seems... I don't know. Seems like a very bad decision. I got to say Team Shane on this one.
You think Merle is a Paperboy fan?
Paperboy, Paperboy. Yeah, I think it's possible. Let me hear that, Paperboy. Okay. I don't know. I don't think so. Something tells me that's not really Merle's thing.
Okay.
Although I would love to see Paperboy in The Walking Dead. Now, that would be incredible.
Yeah. We need to get tools from Dale. He's like, oh, no, last time you guys borrowed my tools, never brought them back.
Look who came crawling back for more.
Yes.
I miss Dale so much. Dale's so great. Dale's just like, no, you can't have this. And if you're going to do it, then, it's really got to come with the nice price tag. So he's able to, him and his buddy Jimbo over
Who's
here.
Who's this guy? Who's Dale's assistant?
He's great. He's Jim. You don't remember Jim?
No.
Just like you don't remember Morales or Jackie?
I don't remember any of the red shirts from the quarry.
Yeah, and that would be the reason why. the emphasis on the red shirt. Though Jim has a really great exit from the show, which we'll get to in a couple episodes.
Okay. All right. So he needs some sort of a car part for the Winnebago. They make a trade, and so they take the bolt cutters, and so... Shane gives Rick some ammo, 4 rounds for 4 men. Is this like some sort of like, if it's like a suicide mission, if they're like sort of like backed into a corner, then they could take themselves out? Is that what Shane's going for?
Yeah, I mean, maybe he's, if Rick needs to pull a mist on everybody, the mist director could return in this moment here.
Yeah.
Shane is hooking him up. He says, listen, I don't like that you're going. I think it's a terrible idea, but if you're going to do it, at least do it with some bullets, bro. So he hooks him up. He gives him the ammo, and that's great news for Rick. I also think, we shouldn't blow past how Rick explains why he's going after Merle to Lori. I think it's to Lori that he says, I was saved by a guy from the hospital. I was saved by somebody who nursed me back to health, and I promised to pay it forward, essentially. So is he blaming Morgan for his stupid idea to go and save Merle? Because I'm pretty sure Morgan would tell Rick, yo, don't do that. Mm-hmm. Don't save that guy. That guy seems like a jerk. I would absolutely not have saved that person. I saved you because you're a pretty cool dude. Don't do this. So I don't know. I think laying this on Morgan's feet seems like a mistake as well.
Yeah. I mean, when we finally hear what happened to Morgan, it doesn't seem like what the issue was that he went into Atlanta and then that's where bad stuff happened. It seemed like you reversed course and then went back and found Mrs. Morgan.
Yeah, I think that the whole thing with Morgan is Morgan looks out for himself and his family, and he was very reluctant to look after Rick. So if you're following by the Morgan rules and you're thinking that the Morgan playbook is telling you to go and save people, I think you misread the book.
So we end up seeing the guys arriving in Atlanta. Meanwhile, back at the camp, we see that Shane did make good on his promise to go and take Carl to go look for the frogs. Shane, for a guy who was very upset about Ed's fire, making a lot of ruckus in the water.
I'm also upset with Shane because he said that there's a real art to catching frogs, and he really hyped himself up as an expert frog catcher. And here he is with Carl, and they really are just messing around. And if Shane actually knows what he's doing in terms of collecting frogs, he's just intentionally destroying any element of surprise he has in this attack.
Yeah.
So it frustrated me. I was very frustrated. I wanted to see those frogs get caught.
Okay. So time for some girl talk. All the girls are out there talking and talking about what people miss. What do some of the ladies miss, Josh?
They miss their coffee maker.
Jackie, yeah.
I think Amy misses her computer. She misses texting.
Yes.
And then Andrea misses something. What does she miss?
Andrea says she misses her vibrator and everybody goes nuts. Carol says she misses hers too. How about that, Carol?
Yeah, and everyone's loving that. It's great. I mean, it's a very funny scene. It's really good Laurie Holden stuff and great Melissa McBride here. Very funny line, but not so funny for long, Rob. Yes. And maybe Ed overhearing what Carol said. Perhaps this is the inciting incident.
I don't think he did because he was really far away. But I just wondered, did they just forget it or it plugs into the wall? What was the issue there?
It's like, you miss your what?
Yeah.
I don't know. We don't need to get into the mechanics of that.
That's curious. All right. So going back to, okay, here comes Ed. Ed Douche is here. And he's like, you know, there seems to be this dynamic of like where the guys are all like goofing off all day and the women need to be like working and doing all the laundry. And Taskmaster Ed Douche shows up. He's like, hey, what's so funny over here? This ain't no comedy club. You need to be working.
I know. Ain't no comedy club. I think they get that, you know? Come on, man. Freaking Ed.
No laughing while you're doing the laundry, ladies.
This is no laughing matter. It's very serious business.
Yeah. And meanwhile, we end up with Laurie talking to Shane.
She's not happy that Shane took Carl to go and catch the frogs, certainly without checking in with Laurie. So Laurie shows up, tells Carl that it doesn't matter what Shane wants you to do. All that matters is what I tell you to do, and pulls Carl away from the quarry, the Carly, and stays behind to really rip Shane a new one.
Yeah.
Because Shane wants to talk. Shane feels like this is very awkward. It's been very weird since Rick came back. You and I were going steady a few days ago, and now you're not even talking to me. And this is where we learn from Laurie, you have no right to talk to anyone in my family. You told me he died. And then she walks away, and that's what we're left with in terms of the relationship between these two characters in this episode. And that's a pretty big revelation in the moment that, like, that really recolors a lot of what you've been seeing about Shane at this point. If he just, like, straight up lied about it, like, that makes things very, very creepy and tense.
Yeah. Was he feeling like he needed to save Laurie and Carl? And if they thought that Rick was still alive, they would not have left.
Yeah, I think that he's going to say exactly that in episode 6, if I'm remembering right. You know, like, that's his logic. His logic is like, if I just let them stay, like, then they're going to get killed. But if I tell them that Rick is gone, then they're going to leave with me. So, like, you get where he's coming from in terms of it from a logical perspective and maybe trying to honor his friend who he doesn't think is going to be coming out of this coma anytime soon. But it's not handled well. And there was this one in a million shot that Rick is actually alive really kind of screws everything up. So it's bad. Not great. Not great, Shane.
It's not great. Okay.
Yeah, so this is where Laurie tells Shane, you can tell it to the frogs.
Tell it to the frogs. Is that a quote? Is that an expression? Is that a thing?
I've never heard that. Yeah. But it should be. It really ought to be. I think it's, they were catching frogs, and she's like, well, you can talk to the frogs. They're your friends now.
They're your friends. Okay. So we end up back in the clothing store trying to work our way back up to Merle. There's just one walker in there. I mean, at the end of that last episode that we saw, seems like this place had been overrun, but now there's just one woman walker in there, and Daryl calls her an ugly skank. Come on, Daryl.
Yeah, come on, Daryl. See, Daryl was really mean back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, everyone was a little bit meaner, perhaps. Like, Glenn was meaner back in the day. I guess Carol was not as mean as she is now, and same with Rick, probably.
But what I do appreciate here, Josh, is that our heroes in The Walking Dead were allowed to have flaws besides the flaw of they care too much about everybody. That's
right.
They're trying to do too much to save their friends. That none of our principals on The Walking Dead have any character flaws.
Wow. Currently, you mean no character flaws whatsoever. Well, in terms of like the good guys, right?
Right. None of the good guys have a character flaw except that they are too brave.
Yeah, Spencer was a douche, but he's not anything we have to worry about anymore. Yeah, that's basically true. Yeah, that's pretty true. It's just like everyone's like a seasoned badass now, and they always do the right thing, and we love each other, and we're always going to protect each other, and we're best friends and family, and it's great. Mm-hmm. But no one is ever really like authentically mad at each other, and no one like ever like says something where everyone else is like, "Whoa,
yeah,
don't say that. Don't call that Walker a dirty skank. That was a human being once."
Mm-hmm.
You know, like everyone seems to be pretty much on the same page these days. Yeah. I think that that's a good observation.
But it just seemed more like real people with that are flawed here in the early going.
Yeah, that might be true.
Okay. So meanwhile, back at the quarry, this is it. Carol's husband, Ed, has had enough of her at the comedy club and is going to pull her out of there. And everybody's like, hey, you can't tell her what to do. And Ed strikes Carol.
Yeah, it's bad. Like right in front of everybody. He also like he gets the like one of his shirts thrown at him by Andrea, and he like instantly throws it back with enough force that it looks like it knocks the wind out of Andrea. He's just a terrible guy.
Yeah.
He's a terrible, terrible guy. But this is what I mean when I say that Ed is a fantastic punching bag, because it galvanizes Shane, who sees the whole thing, to come marching across the beach and kick the crap out of Ed, and it's just punching him in the face over and over and over and over and over again, and everyone's like, yo, Shane, we got it. He got it. It's definitely settled. He figured it out. And Shane tells Ed that if he ever lays a hand on anyone again, his wife or his daughter, he will beat him to death, and he will not stop punching him next time. And then he punches him some more. So I feel like Shane's hand has to be pretty tired after that scene, and certainly Ed's face is just like a balloon at this point.
Yeah, I thought that maybe this is where we were going here, where Shane was going to end up killing Ed, but that was not the case. But really beats him within an inch of his life.
Yeah, it's not, you know, Ed doesn't have much further to go, but he still has a little bit more. He's still got a little bit of utility on this show. But yeah, he just gets his ass handed to him. And Shane, who at first looks like, you know, the knight in shining armor here, you know, saving the day, also kind of ends up looking like a total lunatic in front of all of these people. Like, everyone's really skeeved out by Shane just like ruthlessly beating up Ed. Did not have to take it as far as he took it.
Yeah, he says, look, I'll beat you to death next time.
Yeah, Ed, I'll beat you to death, man. You know,
yeah,
Shane's not messing around. Shane's gonna do what he's got to do. He will, you know, he'll take it all the way to the top.
Yeah. And Ed does seem to have a size advantage on Shane, and it was meaningless. He can only beat up Carol. That's all he has.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a fat suit, you know, Superman in a fat suit, whatever you want to call that.
Okay. So Josh, the final thing we see here in Tell It to the Frogs is we get up to the roof. Daryl is pissed because he ends up seeing where Merle was. No word on what happened to those walkers, but we end up just seeing Merle's hand laying on the ground.
Yeah, no word on the walkers, so you would have to assume that they probably just turned around, right? Because otherwise, if they had made it onto the roof, you would think that you would see at least one or two walkers on the roof, and certainly that hand wouldn't be there anymore. Like, someone would have, one lucky walker, one lucky geek, Rob, would have gotten to Merle's hand and would have had a little hand sandwich. But otherwise, there's, you know, there's no way that hand is surviving if any walkers make it onto the roof.
Yeah. Okay, so Josh, my big question here, with the hacksaw that he had, why not cut through the handcuffs?
Maybe he tried. Maybe he tried and it's not getting through. And, you know, it seems like there's a sense of urgency to the moment where the geeks look like they've started like breaking through, like they have a door open. So maybe they're, you know, he's thinking that it's going to be close and I really need to get out of here. And if I'm not able to cut through the cuffs, I could certainly cut through my hand. And you kind of just have to do it at that point. I think maybe that's where his head's at. And also, we don't really know where his head is at because he's been talking about so many disparate things on the rooftop. I think it's fair to say that, you know, that Merle's brain is at least a little fried, and on a good day, it's already pretty fried.
So I'm looking at some internet threads on this subject of using a hacksaw. Is it easier to cut through handcuffs or your own arm? Basically, the consensus is it's easier to cut through the handcuffs, but it might be quicker to cut through the arm.
Yeah.
So perhaps that we got to a point where things were really getting tense with the geeks.
I think that's what it is. So I think in a moment like that, Merle showed that he was willing to do what needed to be done.
Yes. Okay. So then we don't see Merle again until season 3, right?
We see him in season two in Chupacabra. Remember Chupacabra, Rob? That's the season two episode where Daryl goes through the woods and has like a vision quest, and Merle Dixon is taunting him in his like wild dreams.
Okay.
But we don't see a flesh and blood real Merle Dixon again until season three.
All right. Well, Josh, you know, and that maybe that's the connective tissue of that Merle brings the geek culture to the governor.
That's a great, great call. Yeah. And the governor's like, ah, geeks. I like that.
I've been waiting for something to call these guys. You nailed it, Merle.
That's really good branding.
Yes. Good work. From the guy that brought you Merle Squirrel. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Josh, fun stuff going through this. Halfway home.
But halfway home. And oh boy, Rob, I can't wait for next week. Episode four is what we're coming to next. Episode four, written by Robert Kirkman, creator of The Walking Dead comic books. And this episode, very memorably, I believe, is called Vatos. Do you recall Vatos, Rob?
Yeah, this is with the gang that's with the old people.
Yes. And it's going to be fantastic. And I can't wait to talk it through.
Yes. I think that this episode, the first time through, where it might have been, you know what? I'll just catch up on these. I think I might have been the first time through. Like, yeah. I said, what?
Well, Vatos is a mixed bag this episode. There's some really weird, weird choices that are happening on the show, just like completely unnecessary material. But it also has a really intense ending. So we'll talk that through. We'll lose some people here along the way, I think. If nothing else, it should be fun podcasting.
Okay. All fun stuff. All right. What's the hashtag this week, Josh?
I loved Angry Merles. I thought that was great.
Yes, Angry Merles. There you go. Yeah. All right, Josh. So in 1 week's time, we'll be back to talk about episode number four of season one of The Walking Dead. Anything else you want to get out there?
No, we got to keep going through this first season of Walking Dead. We got to keep trucking or driving in our sweet convertible with the sirens blaring.
All right. So we will be back to talk about everything coming up, continuing our season one rewatch of The Walking Dead. We'd love to hear your thoughts and your comments on postshowrecaps.com. Of course, you could subscribe to our Walking Dead podcast feed. Go to postshowrecaps.com/TWD podcast. Or for everything we're doing on Post Show Recaps, go to postshowrecaps.com/iTunes. Until then, take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.